It ended with a Zoom video call. That's how my daughter finished up her time in class this year. Her teacher wrote in that last email, "We are now at the end of the year. Of course, this is not the way I ever imagined, ever saying goodbye to my students and families." Ms. Bergman is not alone. Teachers across Wisconsin have taken on challenges they'd never envisioned before this spring. And four of those teachers are talking with us this hour. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What was it like for you as a teacher or a student, as a parent, to end the school year after months of remote learning? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Our first guest now is Brianne Kanick. She's K-12 art teacher in the Wabeno Area School District in northern Wisconsin. She's the district's only art teacher. Brianne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning.
And Jessica Dennis teaches elementary math and science and high school science in the Washington Island School District. Washington Island is the smallest school district in the state with just under 80 students. Jessica, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Both of our guests' last day of the school year was Friday. Jessica, what sticks with you about wrapping up this year that had to end so differently than many, many others?
Well, I think the biggest thing that stuck with me was just missing my students. Honestly, I know I have said it before, but I feel very robbed. I didn't get to see them. I didn't get to say goodbye to them. It doesn't feel like the end of the school year, to be honest.
Yeah, because you didn't have any of those things that usually like mark that big time.
Right. We closed the school building right before our district had spring break. So we closed up shop and everything, and then all of a sudden we went on spring break, and it literally feels like we've never left spring break. And I know that's really weird because obviously we've had Zoom calls, we've had Google Meet calls, we've had staff meetings. I've graded a ton of stuff, but it just doesn't feel right to not be in my classroom, to be in the building, to not see my coworkers face to face and have conversations. And it just doesn't feel, it's not the same vibe as that you would have for a normal school year.
Brianne, does what Jessica's saying resonate with you at all?
I would absolutely agree. We finished our year as teachers yesterday, and it's just been really hard. I was closing up both of my classrooms because I teach in two different buildings, and I was sending home work, and I was just feeling really emotional because I knew that I hadn't seen those kids in 2 months, and I really missed them. And as much as we tried to stay in contact, there were those families that it was just radio silence, pun intended, but radio silence for 2 months and knowing nothing about what's going on in their lives and knowing that I have a lot of stability, but my students and families don't. So it was really a struggle yesterday. I had a hard time.
So there are students you haven't heard from.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I teach 171 elementary students every week, and I had almost nothing from more than half. And I would say the majority of those issues came down to connectivity and availability of resources for those students. So eventually I stopped doing their Google Classroom with their teachers, and I started sending home paper copies and giving them my phone number and saying, hey, if you did the work, please, please send me pictures, send it in. I want to see the art that you made because you're awesome and I need to see it to keep going.
Jessica, that isolation that Brianne is talking about, did you see that with your students too? How did they handle it?
We did have some students who they struggled. I'm not going to lie. I think this was a struggle for a lot of people and a lot of our families. And I do want to say, though, that I do have a couple families of the elementary level who I'm fortunate enough, I got to check in with every single one of my students once or twice a week. And I mean, we live on a 35 square foot or a square mile island. So I was even able to see some of them riding their bikes past my house or driving around. So I'm fortunate enough that I got to see and keep in contact with all of my students, but, you know, it's fun when I check in with them and I say, hey, how are you doing? What's positive? What's going on? And I had one little girl tell me that this is the best quarantine ever. This is the best vacation ever, because their family was just really staying positive and doing a lot of non-traditional things, from baking and building things and engineering things in their yard. And it just was really warming to hear that some of our littles were doing great, and to hear that this is the best staycation ever, really was, it was just really heartwarming to hear that they weren't struggling. But I know that it's not like that all the time. And I know that for them to say that, it just really goes to show the overall feeling of that household and the overall feeling that the parents were projecting. It was really, it was just really heartwarming to hear.
Brand, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was happy to hear that. I tried to keep in constant contact with as many students as I could. I had a weekly wellness check and check in with one of my third graders, and it was great. Like, we would call each other every Monday. We would talk for hours. And she also, her family owns a pizza business that I frequent. So she would tell me about the pizzas that they had, and she was having a great time. I mean, she always wanted to share and she was always making work. And I had another family at the elementary that was just constantly, constantly sending me pieces and projects they were working on. And we actually did a collaborative project with them where one of the kids in the family made, well, they all made recycled crayons, and all of my elementary students got a recycled crayon that was made by one of the kids in that family. And she sent home like a quote, and we sent home coloring pages. And there was just this really wholesome feeling of community from my school that I think kids saying this is the best quarantine ever, I think they feel very valued and they feel very seen. And it's not to say they don't feel like that during the school year, but we really, I mean, I know I was putting in a lot of effort, but many of our staff put in that effort to make the kids feel loved and missed. So, yeah.
Right, because that didn't happen by accident. It's a real intentional thing on the part of educators, you know, and working with parents to make sure that kids, you know, make it through this.
Definitely, definitely that. And with a positive attitude too, because we don't all know what's going to happen. But if every time you get on a Zoom call, you're like, I don't know what's going to happen, the kids start to flip. And so do the parents. You know, you want to be that source of positivity and just light.
Yeah, we're hearing from teachers this hour as we round out the school year. We've been talking with Brianne Kanick, who's an art teacher, and also with Jessica Dennis, who teaches science and math. And they're part of this panel this hour as we hear from teachers about how they handled education in a pandemic, how they reached out to students, how they managed to try to figure out how to keep kids motivated, keep themselves motivated when so much was so different in these last few months of the year. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you think about teachers and students not being able to say goodbye in person? Are you a teacher? What struggles did you see your students face? Maybe you're a student moving on from one grade to the next or graduating. What do you want your teachers to know about the effect that they've had in these, as we've heard, unprecedented times? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. We're having this conversation on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. This spring, school districts relied on online learning to get to summer vacation. One of the challenges there is that not all kids have reliable access to the internet. Analysis from the Wisconsin Policy Forum shows more than 82,000 kids in our state didn't have internet at home before the pandemic, and it's likely worse now as families decide what to cut from their budgets. We're talking with teachers now as they finish the school year that's unlike any other, and they try to support students from literal miles away. We're taking your calls too at 800-642-1234. Are you a teacher or a student? Tell us what this spring has been like for you. We're hearing from Brianne Kanick, who's an art teacher at the Wabino Area School District in northern Wisconsin, and Jessica Dennis, who teaches science and math on Washington Island. Jessica, you know, you're both teaching in rural areas where internet access is not always available. Did your students have access to the internet?
I would have to say that all of our students had access to the internet. I know that there were times when some were using hotspots. We had a family on the island who owns a motel who said, come use our internet if you don't have it. But I believe everybody had it, and we did have a glitch or two. I know that last week during our finals week, one of our internet providers was out for a hefty portion of the day, so we ended up getting a internet outage day, kind of like a snow day where we just had to postpone classes. But I was fortunate enough that I got to meet with my students who did not have that internet provider. I did not have that internet provider. And I know that on the flip side, I had a day where our internet was out for the morning, and instead of doing nothing, I couldn't do nothing. So I went around and delivered things to some of my students, and I stopped at a student's house to help them with some math and some science. And you know, it was just, it's hard because not everybody could stay connected in a Zoom call or in a Google Meet call. Some of my students, Google Meets worked better than Zoom. And there were times when it was unstable connection or they would pop in and out of the meeting. In internet in rural areas is hard. It's not always reliable.
Yeah. Same for you, Brianne. Not always reliable in your district?
I would say absolutely. I tried to do weekly check-ins with each of my classes at the high school level. So I would have two check-ins 2 days a week. And it was really just a matter of, you know, how the weather was that day. If the wind was blowing in a certain direction, you didn't have internet. And kids would text me instead, or they would try to get through to the call on their phones. I stopped doing that eventually. And one of the things that I realized is a lot of the kids didn't want to be seen in their homes, or they didn't want us to know where they were at in terms of, you know, if they're in their room and they don't feel great about being in their room, they don't want to call you from there. So I would get voice calls instead. And the internet is always kind of flaky up here. I'm lucky enough to have a good connection. My house is right down the road from our wireless connection. But at school, we also had an outage. When that would happen, I would go into school and I would try to lesson plan. I tried to go on deliveries, but I will admit I do get car sick. So I just spent a lot more time packing the meals or putting together the work. I tried to be helpful in any way that I could because I knew that the kids were feeling isolated. So I would send extra stuff home, letters, notes, cards, good stuff like that to keep them motivated.
Brianne Kanick is an art teacher at the Wabino Area School District in northern Wisconsin. Also hearing from Jessica Dennis, who teaches science and math on Washington Island. We're spending the hour checking in with school teachers to find out how this year, interrupted by the pandemic, went. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Ron from Madison wants to join the conversation. Good morning, Ron.
Thanks. If we don't use standardized benchmark testing, then one or more teachers and administrators must evaluate the academic achievement of every student in grades 1 through 12. My examples are math. If I didn't learn long division in third grade, I would not succeed in fourth grade in arithmetic. If I did not learn to multiply and divide mixed fractions in fourth grade, I would not succeed in fifth, sixth, seventh through 12th grades either. if I didn't learn to conjugate the 20 most common irregular verbs in the English language in fifth grade, I would fail the rest of my life. Okay, a different example, someone else.
Oh, hey, Ron, we totally understand where you're going with this. Standards are certainly on teachers' minds, and I want to give our teachers a chance to respond to that because we're certainly looking at that. Jessica, how are you thinking about students' achievement this spring and moving on and trying to catch them up in the fall?
Well, I can definitely say that we as a district are working on curriculum over the summer, and I think everybody overall in the entire nation and everywhere is working on it because we tried to pick out our essential standards and teach that these last 9 weeks so that way we knew what our students needed to have by the end of basically by the end of the school year. And I think one of the things is everybody is going to end up playing catch up in the fall because there were some students who were fortunate enough to meet with their teachers, and there were some students who, unfortunately, due to circumstances outside everybody's control, you weren't able to connect with them. And I think it's very important to keep that in mind. And I can tell you that I'm not entirely sure how next year is going to go, specifically the fall, but I always give like a prereq, especially in math. I give a test. It's called the beginning of the year test, and it's I have the ability to gauge what students know and what students don't know, and that's not their fault. It's more of a what do I need to work on? What do I know that they are coming in with? And I think that everybody is going to have to figure how we are going to start the school year, knowing that this was a very unconventional time, and we're going to have to catch kids up regardless. I don't think it's just one district or one subject. It's everybody across the board. We're all in this together.
And Brianne, you teach every grade level in your district. How are you thinking about this?
I'm constantly thinking about it, Keely.
It never goes away.
I would say my philosophy is, you know, in the fall and throughout the summer, I'm going to try to keep as much contact as I can with my students and my families. And my thought is I need to be my best and my most patient self with the students that I'm coming to in the fall. Because we as teachers had to absolutely change the way that we operated, and the kids did too. I mean, they went from seeing us every day and being in this routine to being in this chaotic world that we live in and seeing things change daily and being confronted with challenges they probably didn't have when they were in our buildings every day. So to go back onto the standards and benchmarks, for me, I have a great advantage in that every year I try to start fresh. When I work with my students that work through the classes to learn more skills, you know, I get their fundamentals in my room. But now I'll have new students that I haven't met, and I'll have to see where they are. Similar to what Jessica was saying, having an assessment or a test of some kind to see where they're at. And I know for a fact that my colleagues in my district, in our math department and science department, are working very hard on curriculum in a way that isn't going to make students feel like they are behind, but that they have more to learn, and they have this positive outlook of, you know, we're all in this together, as you had said, and we're not going to struggle alone. We'll struggle together. Yeah. So, you know, just trying to work to a common goal in that our students should succeed or feel like they can succeed in these subjects where they may have holes and places where, you know, the instruction didn't come through. But yeah, my best and most patient self. I think about that a lot because we're going to spend so much more time if we go back in a normal format, which I doubt will happen. You know, we're going to have to approach this with, we have to reteach expectations. We have to teach the students what we think is going to be the best environment for them to learn in and the safest for us and for them. And it's totally crazy. I don't know the approach, but I'm just keeping right on.
Brianne, thank you for your honesty and for your time this morning.
Of course, this was great. Thank you.
And Jessica, thank you also for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Jessica Dennis teaches elementary math and science and high school science in the Washington Island School District. Washington Island is the smallest school district in the state with just under 80 students. And Brianne Kanick is the K-12 art teacher at the Wabino Area School District in northern Wisconsin. She's the district's sole art teacher. Our conversation with teachers continues now. We are talking with two English teachers who joined the program, one from Milwaukee, another from Eau Claire. And you can join in, 800-642-1234. Email us your experiences, your questions, your accolades for teachers at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us here on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Since at least March 18th, classrooms across Wisconsin have been dark. Students learned from home. Teachers transitioned their activities to internet-based lessons, all while teaching from their own kitchen tables, sometimes managing their own children's assignments. It's been quite the journey. And we're talking with teachers who persevered and made it to summer break. We're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Are you a teacher or a student? What do you want people to know about what this spring was like? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We've got Derek Black on the line. He's an eighth grade language arts teacher at DeLong Middle School in Eau Claire. They finished the year on Friday. Derek, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. And Kelly O'Keefe Betcher is an English teacher at Rufus King International High School in Milwaukee. She teaches 9th, 10th, and 11th graders. Rufus King follows an early schedule, so their last day was May 21st. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Kelly, that switch to remote learning happened very quickly. How did you and your students cope with that?
You know, it's so surreal to look back on it because so many things have changed. Since March 13th, it was a Friday the 13th, and I said goodbye to my students completely assuming I was going to see them that Monday, right? We had a lot of information, but everything was changing so quickly. There was a public announcement 6 o'clock that night saying we're closing the schools. So it was an absolute shock, jolt, disruption, because there truly was, well, at that point, we thought we were coming back after spring break. Right? So it was jarring, it was alarming, but we did not know, right? We did not know the enormity of what we were stepping into back on that Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Derek, you teach English at DeLong Middle School. Your students, some of them moving into high school next year, that's a big transition for some kids. And now they've ended their last few months in a little bit of security where they know how it works online. How are you talking to them about that?
That's a wonderful question because talking is it's more of a text, really. It's communicating via emails and messaging. And one of the big things at the middle level is that final month. The month of May is so important because we just talk that transition, and not having that opportunity to do that face-to-face, one-on-one with each kid. It became really strange to put out these Monday videos of me telling the kids, you're going to be okay, and email me, let me know how you're doing with this transition or the fear of the transition. And then not hearing anything back was really strange.
What did you think about before you had to record those messages with so much uncertainty, knowing you had to go into it like radiating this positivity?
Well, at first it was fun because you know, we assumed we'd be coming back. So the first week or so, the videos were fun and exciting, and hey, this is a cool opportunity. You guys get to see me teach from my pole shed, you know, or here I am in my backyard in my garden. I did a lot of my lessons in my garden, and that was really fun. It was easy to keep the positive nature. As we got into mid-April and farther on, and then you weren't hearing back from students, it became a really interesting and difficult way to lay out the week and to think about, okay, how do you keep the kids that are fully engaged, and how do you keep those kids that you haven't heard from a couple weeks, how do you get them back on board? So it just became a real interesting head game on Saturday and Sundays as you're planning and getting ready and then going and making the videos and putting them out for the kids to watch and hopefully learn. And then most importantly, I would wait then, you know, that Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and wait for those responses from kids and the questions from kids. And some weeks it was really high, and some weeks, boy, oh boy, it'd be crickets.
That engagement is a real critical piece. Milwaukee Public Schools, like a lot of districts, switched to a pass-fail system. Kelly, what effect did that have on how much effort your students put into their work?
Oh, that is such a hot button question, right? You could ask 100 people that question and you would get so many different answers. I started right away. I mean, as soon as I heard that schools were closed, I was meeting virtually with my kids because I felt like, even though we don't know what the grades are going to be or what the impact of this is going to be, they need this to feel normal and safe. For me, I had strong participation going into spring break. And then once spring break hit and the district came out with everything now is enrichment, it shifted a lot, like what Derek is saying. When kids felt like this was going to have an impact, they hung in there. They found ways. They texted. They used Remind. We were doing Zoom meetings. We were doing Google Meets. Like, they were finding a way to me and I was finding a way to them. But teenagers are human beings. And as soon as someone says to them, you know what, you're done, it is the rare human being who says, I will now keep working for my own personal edification. That is not the nature of adolescence. And my message to my kids was, everything you're doing right now will help you. So if you're still working and you're still submitting work, I'm going to keep entering it. And then when I am ready to do your grades, I'm going to type in a message on your report card, right, on your Infinite Campus that says, this student went from a blank to a blank, or this student figured out a way to stay connected, or this, you know what I mean? I languaged it so they could then have something to say on their college applications, their scholarship applications. What did that look like for you as a young person? How did you hang in there?
Mm-hmm. School's out for the summer, and we're spending the hour checking in with teachers from around the state about this unusual year. That's what we'll call it. We are talking with Kelly O'Keefe-Betcher, who teaches English in Milwaukee, and Derek Black, who teaches language arts at middle school in Eau Claire. And Kelly, Milwaukee, where you teach, has been among the hardest hit counties in the state by the pandemic. More than 66,000 cases, more than 300 deaths. For you, some of your students, the pandemic has literally hit home. How are they doing?
So I'm just going to catch my breath for a second, because one of the first cases in Milwaukee was from a student who has graduated from Rufus King, one of the first deaths. And a student of mine, her grandmother was not well going into the pandemic, but then she contracted the virus and then she went into a coma and then she ultimately passed. And the student was messaging me through that entire experience and quick remind messages, my grandma's in the hospital, what should I be working on, was her message to me. And my response was, what you should be working on is loving your grandma, and anything else is going to work itself out, right? Your number one focus right now is your health, your family's health. This other stuff, it's real. And I also understood she needed a mental health break. You know what I mean? Like, come on, give me something else to think about because I'm terrified. So I would send her the Google Classroom link and say, you know what? my priority is your health and your well-being. But if you need a mental health break from all of that, check it out. Here's some things that we've been working on. But yeah, more loss and more suffering for our city and for our students and for our community than I can capture in this 30 minutes.
And when we go through hard times, it's sometimes easy to lean on routine. So not only was she and other students experiencing that loss, but they couldn't cling to those routines that they so had clung to, I guess, for so long, or they were so used to. There wasn't that normalcy.
Exactly. And no closure, right? And for very good reasons, the way we approach funerals and those rituals of farewell and Thanksgiving, those were taken as well. So to be able to return to school after the passing of a beloved grandmother and to have all of your friends and your teachers acknowledge it and grieve it collectively, to have that taken away is excruciating.
Derek, normally you would see students every day. You might be able to pick up on signs that they could be struggling. How did you gauge your students' emotional and mental health during distance learning?
Yeah, this is the big question mark that going forward. You know, clearly we're going to have some gaps curricularly and academically, but my biggest fear is where are we going to be at with the mental health of our kids? You talked about routine, and one of the ways I try to schedule my classroom is every day we try to keep the same routine, and that way you can really gauge your kids. You know where they're at. You know if a kid's having a bad day. Our grade level counselors are excellent at really having that additional contact with families and letting teachers know. And it was really hard. You get a message, which usually came across as like a text message, and so it wasn't even a complete sentence. It would just say, having bad day. And, you know, you don't know how to read into that. You don't know, does that mean you got in trouble last night because you stayed up too late, or does that mean you lost somebody or a pet got it? You know, that not being there to really gauge a student's mental health and to help them through it and be a mentor or just that relationship building that is so critical at especially at the middle level where we work. It's just every student at my building has an adult that they feel they can talk to and share things with, and to not be able to have that, I think I'm very afraid for what the future holds for those kids who didn't have that emotional support. Especially in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure a lot of students would want to process that with an adult who might not be a family member, and to not have that is really tough.
Yeah. Derek Black teaches language arts. We're also talking with Kelly O'Keefe Betcher. They're two of the teachers joining us this morning to talk about the school year that was and how they work to continue helping their students learn, but also support them in so many different ways that we do in our schools when we had to meet virtually. We are taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you a teacher or a student? What do you want people to know about your year? Maybe you're a parent and you have a message for the teachers that have worked hard in these crazy circumstances. 800-642-1234. Our conversation continues here on The Morning Show. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. School is out for summer, but we'll probably be talking about this year for a long time to come. We're looking back, taking stock of how teachers help students get through these months during a pandemic, and we're talking about what comes next. Our guests are educators who work to connect with students during a time of upheaval, and you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. We're joined by Kelly O'Keefe Betcher, who teaches English at Rufus King High School in Milwaukee, and also Derek Black, who teaches language arts at DeLong Middle School in Eau Claire. And Derek, schools traditionally run on a tight schedule, but with remote learning, the work can be done whenever. How did you help your students understand and handle that kind of freedom?
My pros cons list of online learning. This, believe it or not, kind of falls in both categories because I had a lot of students doing work and sending me emails and texts well after midnight, and I had other kids that were logged in at 7 in the morning, 7:45 in the morning. So I think the fact that the kids had the flexibility to work at a time that might be a bit more beneficial for them than, you know, say, writing an essay at 8 in the morning, if it works better for them at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be great. The hard part was wanting to be there to you know, immediately answer a kid's questions. But unfortunately, if a student emails me at 3:45 in the morning, I'm not getting back to them until at least 7:30 the next morning, you know. So the hard part was trying to establish school hours, and that you just can't do that. So, and then in addition to that, I had my own children at home, so I'm trying to navigate both of that, you know, being a teacher for students at the school I work at, but then also being a teacher for my own students. And what we found was, even within my own house, some of my, you know, my older son, he worked really well early in the morning, whereas my other son, he kind of slow played his day all the way out. So it was a positive in terms of allowing a student to work at a time that was more beneficial for them, but it was a negative in terms of how I, as a teacher, could get back to them and provide them the feedback that they needed for the question. And a lot of times, if they had a question at 3 in the morning and they couldn't move forward, then they couldn't move forward until I got back to them, which wouldn't be until 7:30 or 8 o'clock the next day in the morning. So that delay was an unfortunate roadblock in their education.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, a lot of teachers try to incorporate current events, social issues into the curriculum. If students had been coming to school, you would have addressed some really serious things. I mean, you would have talked about the new coronavirus. You would have talked about George Floyd's death in Minneapolis and the protests that followed. How did you reach students to tackle these topics remotely?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, last Sunday, I was watching probably CNN, and I sent a remind message to all of my students, acknowledging exactly what you just said. In fact, I think I wrote something like, if we were together in our classroom, we would be thinking about this. We would be reading about it. We would be deconstructing the difference between a protest and a riot, right? We would be looking at all of the implications. We would be looking at the debate between Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. We would be able to process it. And I said, we can't do that, but I love you and I miss you. And I'm here for you. And within seconds, these notifications, just my phone was just, as the young people would say, my phone was just blown up. Because just even having that acknowledged, that this conversation, this moment, we're still in it. We are separate, but we're not isolated in that way. We might not be in the same space, but you're not alone. I'm thinking about you. I'm knowing that this is tough for you. I get it. This is hard. And you do not have to carry this by yourself.
That's a message for students. I think that's a message for all of us.
Right? Right? It's because of the social isolation, which is necessary, and it is saving lives, my personal opinion, that can immediately become really terrifying. Like, well, I can't see anybody. I can't be deeply connected to these people that I love. We're having to figure it out. We're having to figure out how do we stay connected and not lose that support and that emotional, it's just so necessary to have that emotional care.
Kelly O'Keefe teaches English at Rufus King High School in Milwaukee. Also speaking with Derek Black, who teaches language arts at DeLong Middle School in Eau Claire. And Derek, I mean, middle schoolers, they're not high schoolers. They're not that grown up yet, but they're not elementary students. They pick up on so much and can digest it with more context. And so not only do we have news that's filtering into your students' minds, but we also have their family circumstances. How do you try to connect with students and get them through that?
Wow. And again, it's tough because a lot of times, you know, like Kelly was saying, you put a message out there, but if you don't hear back from the kids, you just, it's really hard to gauge, well, should I keep pushing the question or do I back off? Are they not answering because they are uncomfortable? Are they not answering because they're not checked in? Where are we at? So one of the nice things, going back to the earlier topic about routines, one of the things that we do in my English class is every day we write in a journal, and it's an ungraded it's graded in the sense that they have to do it, but I never look at it. But I just want you guys to really use this as an opportunity to get whatever's on your mind off your chest and down on paper. And then because of this COVID first, and then the George Floyd and everything, I said, you know, guys, you're living in a historic time. Please, please, please make sure if you can't talk to an adult, if you can't get a hold of me, if for some reason you just don't feel a person to talk to, use this journal and document everything that's going on. And the one nice thing is in the last week, I've had a lot of students say, hey, Mr. Black, you know, I never liked that journal when we did it in class, but boy, it's been great in this time off. So I think hopefully, and unfortunately, you have to put a lot on the kids' shoulders. And like you said, middle school, they're not high school, but they're definitely old enough to know that, boy, this doesn't feel right, and I need to do something.
What do you want people to understand about the work that you've done this spring, Derek?
To understand. I mean, it's just different. It's everything is different, but the biggest takeaway for me, and when you're in the trenches and you're doing it every day, you kind of forget this, but we are in a people business, and it's very, very difficult without that face-to-face contact, without the human element to education. I think a lot gets lost, and so the important thing is for educators and parents and community members is to remember we all have a job together, and that's to keep conversations going, keep encouraging students to keep learning and pushing themselves and challenging themselves. And if sometimes that means it has to fall on their own shoulders, it has to at this time. But eventually, and I believe this wholeheartedly, we will be back in the classroom and then the relationships can be formed again. But it's very difficult without that human connection. And so just stay in there as long as you can and know that someday we will be back and then those human connections can begin again.
Kelly, same question as we wrap up. What should people realize?
You know, it's such a good question. I got a message from a dad, actually. And he's a dad who I hadn't heard much from. And he just sent me a very simple message that said, you know what? I've always appreciated you, but now I appreciate you. And it was just so sweet the way he said it. I think there's been kind of a reckoning, right? There's been an understanding that our schools and the role that they play in our communities and in the well-being of our students' lives, of our family life, of our community life. I'm not saying anyone took that for granted. What I'm saying is I think that it has invited all of us to look at, are we doing enough for our schools? Are we doing enough to guarantee the health and the well-being of young people? And I'm really sensing that there's a new understanding of that, just based on what kids are saying, what parents are saying, what community leaders are saying. I think we have this incredible gift. We have this moment to say, schools are so vital. What can we do to guarantee their success?
Kelly, thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
And Derek, we appreciate you being here too.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking with Derek Black, language arts teacher at DeLong Middle School in Eau Claire, and Kelly O'Keefe Betcher, an English teacher at Rufus King High School in Milwaukee. And we want to make a correction. We noted that there were 66,000 cases of COVID in Milwaukee County. That's actually the number of negative cases in Milwaukee County. There have been almost 9,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Milwaukee, and more than 300 people have died. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network.